The content of the following broadcast is offered as is. It confers no rights or warranties. The opinions expressed here are solely those of the participants and may not reflect those of the Microsoft Corporation, its partners, friends, and family. Welcome to IT Heroes. And now here's your host, Michael J. Murphy.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to another installment of IT Heroes, Stories from the Trenches. These are the stories of the men and the women making a difference in IT every day. I am pleased to have with us today a couple of representatives of the Microsoft Corporation. We have Ed Faulkner and Fran Wansigel. Folks, welcome so much to the program.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Certainly. It's a pleasure to have you both here. Why don't we start with what we're going to be talking about today is we're going to be talking specifically about Microsoft's role in Katrina relief and the Katrina relief efforts that Ed and his team undertook following the disaster that struck Mississippi and New Orleans, Louisiana, and the whole Gulf area. Ed, why don't you tell us what your role at Microsoft is and how you got involved in the Katrina relief effort initially?
Sure, Mike. Thanks. I appreciate that. Well, my title is Program Manager for the Microsoft Across America Mobile Event Experience. And basically, that's seven trucks that we call them. They're more like RVs. We take them all over the country doing marketing events with our Microsoft partners. And it's a great program. It allows them to focus on technology and have a really cool environment to show it. These trucks are self-contained. They have satellite dishes. They have generators. They each have a full-time technical specialist on board, so that all the technology is always working. We do these great demos, and they're great. But when Katrina hit, we quickly realized that we had some assets that could really benefit some people, and so we hooked up with the Red Cross and deployed three out of our seven trucks down to the affected area. And it took quite a bit of work, logistics, to get them kind of retrofitted, if you will, for the kind of work we'd be doing down there. We staged them in Dallas. We loaded up supplies. We looked for volunteers from our staff, and we have one of them on the call today, which you'll meet in a minute, and two others that came along. And went down there, and we followed along the Red Cross directions. So they would identify areas were needing assistance with a self-contained technology truck. And what we were doing is we were connecting folks, evacuees, with the online Red Cross services, with FEMA support, and with other websites, some that Microsoft has created. KatrinaRelief.com, I believe, is the URL of one that we created. And we helped people hook up to funds, find lost, relatives that had been maybe taken to different evacuee camps. And it was a lot of work. It was a lot of people beyond just obviously myself and Fran on the call really participated to make this happen. So it was a great adventure.
And Ed, just to give our audience a little better idea of what these trucks are and what we're talking about when we talk about managing this resource for this event. These trucks, if I'm not mistaken, these are Columbia Class 18 Freightliner chassis with custom boxes on top.
Yeah, just off the top of your head, that's great. I like that. Yeah, we're not doing any prep here at all. We have seven of them. They're about 42 feet long. They're, like you mentioned, they're truck chassis, but they really resemble more of an RV. So we do refer to them as trucks, but they're if somebody ordered one, they could order it to be something that people could live in. And we obviously have it spec'd out to have technology. We have two different designs, but one of them has about five laptops and a server, and the other four have probably about 10 laptops. So we have double the technology. So they're full of technology.
So these trucks are just packed to the gills with the latest and greatest Microsoft technology.
Absolutely.
They also support satellite internet connections. Is that correct?
That is right.
And so when you were down there in the Katrina zone, were you the only connectivity that some of these areas had?
Well, that's a great question. We were. In fact, I'm going to steal a little bit of Fran's story here because she has plenty. But one of the reports I received from her and some of the other folks evacuees, you know, maybe a couple thousand people living in like an arena or something, sometimes not only would we be the only source of connectivity for the evacuees, but also the Red Cross themselves would depend on our technology to communicate with each other. So it was, we were not a luxury, we were a necessity in most of the places that we went to.
And you mentioned that normally these trucks are deployed for partner events, Microsoft events, launch events, that sort of thing. But they were reconfigured to support this disaster. And normally these trucks have a TS on them, a technical specialist. And Fran, that's your role with these trucks, correct?
Yes, that's correct.
And you were actually on the trucks down in the relief area, is that correct?
I was.
And tell us about that. What was that like? What did you see every day down there? How long were you down there, first of all?
Pardon me?
How long were you down there, first of all?
We were there just a couple days shy of 3 weeks.
Okay.
It was quite an experience, definitely life-changing. As Ed has already mentioned, we were the one and only source for any type of internet connectivity. We were also really the source for any contact outside of the camp that we were in. We were in a Red Cross shelter. We also happened to be in an area that housed many of the military, FEMA people, as well as Humane Society folks. So we actually had, animals coming in, getting rescued and that kind of thing. So it was very interesting. I wasn't expecting a lot of what we've seen there. We were the only type of contact, as I mentioned. They did not have any type of an infrastructure whatsoever. They had no phone lines at all that they could communicate with. There were a couple of cell phones, but cell phone service was pretty sketchy. So we were all of the communications right there in our two trucks.
And in the disaster area, I mean, where did you stay? Where did you live?
Oh, we lived on the trucks.
You lived on the trucks?
Yeah.
For 3 weeks?
Correct. Yeah. We actually, there were two TSs, two technical specialists, myself and another gentleman, and then two of the truck drivers. And the four of us stayed on the two trucks for the entire time that we were there. Three of us stayed on one, and then the other guy had a truck to himself. But it was quite interesting. I actually slept in the kitchen.
Really?
Yeah.
Just curled up there on the countertop.
Pardon me?
Just curled up there on the countertop.
Sort of, yeah. They actually had a dinette area that converts to a bed like a normal RV would. So that was my bed.
Fascinating. And what role, then, did you guys provide and support? Who were the people that you met? I mean, we know Ed had mentioned that you became the source of communication infrastructure for the local Red Cross that was there working. What about the folks in the town and the evacuees? What was that like?
Wow. Well, you know, we went in there, and we really didn't have any idea what to expect. We knew that we were going to be there to provide internet access. We didn't really know specifically what role we would have, whether it would be an active role or whether they'd just come in and do what they needed to do and, you know, go on. As it turned out, people came on board initially and looked for loved ones. So they went to the Red Cross site and tried to do lookups and try to locate where people they hadn't communicated with since the disaster happened, you know, see if they could track them down.
Did you see people actually make connections?
Yeah, we sure did.
And what was that like?
That was really amazing because, you know, you just think of what the people had been through up to the point before they got to the truck, you know, spending, it would have been about a week, you know, wondering where people were, if their family members, their friends, their loved ones were safe. So they come aboard the truck and they do a little search and they're able to, you know, find out that somebody's in a Red Cross shelter, maybe in Houston or someplace. And it was just really, really wonderful to see the expression and the joy when they were able to find somebody.
And the relief.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, yeah. So a couple of days into it, we ended up, our primary job, and I didn't mention that as it turned out, most of the people that came aboard the trucks had never used a computer before. I mean,
really?
Literally had never used a computer, nor had they any type of, you know, keyboarding experience. So we, the four of us, all were doing entry for them, you know, pretty much the entire day. So one after another, you know, we'd ask, okay, what can we help you with? And we would proceed to fill out applications for FEMA, which became the primary thing that we did for the remaining 2 weeks. We checked on FEMA status. And that was really exciting, too, because people would, you know, come into the truck, they would fill out their FEMA forms, and then because they were doing them on the Internet, on our trucks, they were able to receive their initial $2,000 from FEMA within about 48 hours.
Really?
So they could actually come on board, we could log them in, set them up with an account, and, you know, see what their status is, and, you know, most of the time they would have that $2,000, you know, either being mailed to them or already sitting in their bank account.
And when you've lost everything, that's extremely valuable.
Oh, yeah, you're not kidding. There was a woman and her husband that came aboard the truck, and the husband had had his leg amputated about a month before the storm hit. So they were already going through some really tough times, and you could just see the weariness on both of their faces. And then to have this happen. And I know that she sat down with me and I entered her application, and you could just tell how exhausted she was, and almost but not quite to the point of losing hope entirely. And, you know, we got her stuff entered, and then she came back a couple days later, and I was able to look up and see that money was in her account, because she actually was one of them that did have a bank account, so they could just do the, you know, electronic funds transfer. So she had the money, and you could just see the elation that, you know, the relief, you know, they can pay their mortgage or, you know, whatever else that they had, because she was concerned about them losing their house, you know, between, you know, the operation on her husband and then the storm. So just a lot of stories like that.
And how many people do you think I'm just trying to imagine, you're in this Red Cross camp, the evacuees are all around, managing the flow of people through the truck. How many people do you think came through the trucks daily?
Well, I actually estimated it at about 300 people per truck per day.
And how many trucks were we doing this
There's
on?
Two in Hattiesburg.
Two in Hattiesburg.
Yeah.
Well, we had another truck in New Orleans that had very close to that same type of numbers, just not for a longer period of time.
I see. So, Ed, I'm wondering, you had the two trucks in Hattiesburg, the one truck in New Orleans proper. I can't imagine the logistics of trying to get these things up and running. And you mentioned earlier that you had done some reconfigurations on the trucks. What special things did you do to get these trucks ready to assist in the disaster relief efforts?
Well, that's a great question. We had, you know, obviously these are set up for partner events, and they're designed for generally pretty friendly environments, right? So we had to take out all the AV equipment that we usually use to support a lot of the seminars that we generally attend, and take that off, put that in storage. We had to then put on supplies. We put on a ton of water. I can't even remember now how many gallons. I used to remember this number, but it was hundreds and hundreds of gallons of water. Not to give out, we needed that for the drivers and the, you know, our own TS staff.
Sure.
We also had meals ready to eat. We had beds that were like cots that we put on there. We found a stash, if you will, of promotional T-shirts that marketing had decided were a little bit out of date to be giving away at the traditional shows that we covered, but we realized that these would be a great asset to people who had just lost everything. So we filled up a couple of the trucks with literally several thousand T-shirts. And Fran, I don't remember if the truck you're on had those or not, but
oh, yeah.
They were usually given away very quickly. And so there's a lot of Microsoft Across America T-shirts out there right now and other things, you know, different event shirts that we've had over the years. And that was a nice benefit that we're able to do. We also had to add some redundancy to our satellite technology. Cisco is one of our major co-sponsors along with HP and Intel and for this truck series. And we wanted to make sure that we would have minimize our risk of satellite downtime. So we had backup equipment that we put on the trucks. And Fran, I don't remember hearing any reports from any of you that we ever needed to use any backup equipment. So I think we were able to all the main primary equipment worked great, but we were definitely ready in case we had problems. We also had a box of laptops donated by the Microsoft office in Austin, Texas, and those went on the truck that went to New Orleans.
And what were they used for?
We used those out in a table outside the truck, so we used our wireless connectivity, and we basically doubled the amount of computing technology we had available to us on that truck.
So you could get more folks online and able to find loved ones, able to apply for relief, et cetera.
Exactly.
Fabulous. Absolutely fabulous. Fran, I can't imagine 3 weeks living in the truck, you know, in Hattiesburg, Mississippi, right?
Correct.
Or is that Louis? No, Mississippi. So you were down there 3 weeks living on the truck. I mean, what was that like?
Well,
for you personally?
I got to tell you, it was a lot better. First of all, a lot better than I thought it was going to be. Second of all, a lot better than, you know, the way that a lot of people in the camp had it. You know, the evacuees, they were all sleeping in a horse arena.
Really?
So if you can imagine what that's like, you know, with the dust and the noise echoing and that kind of thing. Some of the Red Cross, not the Red Cross, they were put up in hotels, but some of the FEMA folks and the Humane Society people, they were actually sleeping in tents. So our conditions were pretty good, you know, in comparison. It actually wasn't really that bad. We cooked outside a lot of times. One of the drivers took the task on to, you know, do some of the grilling. And, you know, the truck itself, you know, truthfully, I might have slept on a kitchen table, but it was actually not so bad. It was pretty close quarters, you know, I have to admit that. But we all got along really well, and, you know, we all knew that we were there and could really kind of keep things in perspective as far as what we were going through in contrast to what the people that lost everything were going through. So in truth, you know, yeah, it wasn't a hotel and it wasn't my own home and my own bed, but it wasn't that bad.
And we're quickly running out of time. I just want to ask you, Fran, one last question. When you looked at all of this disaster all around you and the assistance that you were able to give these folks, is there one particular person's story or something in particular from that time that really you know you'll never forget?
Oh, yeah, yeah. There is a woman that was found 8 days after the storm hit. She was in one of the Gulfport cities. I don't recall which one. She wasn't right actually in New Orleans. She had lived in a trailer home before the disaster happened. And she had gone over to a friend's house when the storm was coming. Well, she looks across the street and sees that her mobile home is basically doing end-over-end flips when the storm was coming. So her next move was she found a box. It was a pretty large box, big, huge box. They found her 8 days curled up in the fetal position inside the box. When that storm came and she found that box, she did not move until they rescued her. And when they came to get her, they could not coax her out of the box. It took them a really long time to get her out of the box. When she came to our truck 3 days after she was rescued, so about 11 days after the storm, she was still literally shaking when you talked to her. And we filled out her FEMA forms, and she became a very close friend of ours. In other words, one of the many people that came out to our trucks time and time again to talk with us, to, you know, do research on, you know, the status of their FEMA applications and so on. Here's the really neat thing. Her daughter lives in Michigan. And what ended up happening with this woman is that her daughter's company heard about her mother's plight and ended up buying her a house, or maybe renting. I'm not sure if they bought or rent. But anyway, they filled this home with clothes and food and furniture and all of the things that she would need, and then brought her up, got a private driver to bring her from Hattiesburg up to Michigan, and had a big welcoming party and parade when she got there. So this woman that spent, you know, 8 days in a box, you know, now has gone from living in these poor conditions to going through what she went through to being reunited with her daughter and then living in this home that she was given.
And And it's just, I mean, it's just amazing. There were so many stories like that. It was amazing how the country came together. I know I looked on Craigslist just a few days after the storm, and there were over 10,000 listings offering free room and board across the country for evacuees. So Fran and Ed, I think you guys did just an incredible job. Your whole team did an incredible job with this. I really want to thank you for your time today. And this is IT Heroes, stories of the men and the women making a difference in IT every day. And certainly you are two of those people. So thank you so much for joining us today.
Thanks.
Thank you, Mike. My pleasure.
Take care.
IT Heroes with your host, Michael J. Murphy, was recorded at Matador Studios in Monmouth Junction, New Jersey. Produced and engineered by Giles Davis. Original music performed and composed by Giles Davis.